ultimately what will get humanity from where we are to where we need to be, really fulfilling our birthright in many ways, is a deep love and compassion for the suffering of others. And that somehow we're not there yet fully, but when we get to that level as a group, then it'll begin to really turn on so much of the substance of change and transformation.
Hello, I'm Julie Kroll. You're listening to the Dr. Julie Show, All Things Connected. Each week we gather right here to make connections that break through the illusion of separation. Welcome. Your journey of conscious evolution continues right here, right now. I recently read my book, Fractured Grace, for the first time. In it, I share some of the mystical, transpersonal, and metaphysical experiences I've had in my life. I remember how my small, separate self was terrified to publish my stories for fear of perceived personal and professional repercussions. Looking back, even as I wrote about these far-out experiences, I picked the rather safe ones. I curated the stories as the first step in my coming out of the closet process. As I read the book, I noticed a couple of things. First, oh, how far we have come, even in the few years since the book was published. There's so much change on the planet, so much evolution happening right before our very eyes. And oh, how far I've come personally in my own evolution. The capacities of an expanded consciousness of love are indescribable. And those mystical stories, well, they're getting even more far out there and unbelievable at times. And then the second thing I noticed when I read my book is I experienced the book as really good medicine for what's happening on the planet. The book frames a healing response that's relevant and helpful as we navigate new terrain in this evolving landscape. In Fractured Grace, I wrote about the mirroring of our evolution as multidimensional beings with the evolution of the world and how that translates to healing fractures and wounds. As I was reading an important section in the healing part of the book, the beautiful celestial voice of Eva Cassidy came on my morning playlist. I paused. I stopped to listen and take in her rendition of the song, What a Wonderful World. I was intoxicated with every note and word of her angelic delivery when a healing prescription for the collective immune response came rushing in. And I heard, it's time to love our world. It's time to love every big and every little thing that's emerging. It's time to love the pain, love the fear, love the violence, love the trauma, love the war. It's time to love the whole of it all. I don't mean love as in having an affection for what's going on, like we approve of war or violence. But love, even that, as in the divine compassion of the loving source, loving her creation, as the light of the cosmic Christ consciousness that heals and makes us whole, as the designing intelligence of the universe that's co-creating an evolutionary shift in our lives. It's time to love our world and everything as it is, as we would a baby with a fever, a child with a broken bone, or a loved one with a newly diagnosed life-threatening disease. We are co-evolutionary partners, and the world needs our love and grace. The world needs our benevolent service, blind faith, tender kindness, and compassionate care. Our new evolutionary capacities turn on in this state of grace. Our evolutionary capacities emerge through the heart as we practice coherence with greater love and compassion. our guidance is clearer, our healing is swifter. When we learn to relax and rest in the awareness of this powerful love force. Choosing love over fear is more important now than it has ever been, and trusting our mystical, transpersonal, and metaphysical experiences is essential. These experiences are turning on and tuning in our new capacities. It's time to share our stories and come out of the closet as universal, multi-dimensional beings. I invite you to take a few conscious breaths, bring your awareness to your heart, open your mind, and settle into your essential wholeness as I introduce my beloved co-host. Dr. Paul J. Mills is professor of public health and family medicine at the University of California, San Diego. He's the author of the award-winning book, Science, Being and Becoming, The Spiritual Lives of Scientists. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Julie. It's great to be together again. And wow, what an introduction. You just laid a very broad landscape, so many implications and things we could do to speak about it. Just foundationally, I can't think of anything, of course, more foundational to speak about in its importance.
Thank you. You know, I felt the tears welling up when I was talking about love the world. And I remember that day, Paul, I turned on that song with Eva Cassidy again today. And I think I've listened to it 5 times. And then I started sending it to people. I'll send it to you later, you and Tiff. But as I was reading that, it sounds really like counterintuitive to love the violence, the pain, the trauma, the war, but it welled up so big inside of me. And I don't know if you felt it while I was reading it, but it's just this different kind of love that I feel is an essential part of our evolutionary process right now. And as I say that, I'll say 2 things. One, for an entire year now, I've had this mantra. My mantra, my affirmation has been that I am an expanding consciousness of love. And I've tried that on for, it's been at least 365 days now, but daily, just I am an expanded consciousness of love. As Jude Curvin says, we don't have consciousness, we are consciousness. So I've been like really embodying that and noticing love moving in my life so differently. So when we talk about what's happening on the planet right now, it's also happening inside of our bodies. You know, there's this mirror thing that I was reflecting on when I wrote my book. When I was reading it, it was like, of course, the warring inside of us is like the warring outside of us. And we simply need to love more, like really come into this compassionate, loving, benevolent grace that I introduced. So I'm curious, what went through your heart and mind as you heard me say, love the world more?
Well, a couple of things, and I'd love to ask you a question about that. When you were speaking, I thought of a couple of things. One, the reality of us as co-creators. We're not just passive experiencers here on this planet, as you know, and many others know. But we are actively creating not our own reality, but the reality of each of us. And this influences our society and the earth at large. And when you were speaking about that, I also thought about the phenomenon of unconditional love that we've spoken about in the past, that we as human beings are utterly, totally, unconditionally loved. And that love has nothing to do with really who we are as a person, anything we've ever done as a person, or anything we've not done that we thought we should have done. The fact that we are loved so unconditionally and deeply and divinely is just because of our existence itself. And that really is a mirror of the Creator's love for the entirety of creation, of course, including the earth. And as I see it, it's our job to do just what you're speaking about, to move into that consciousness. It's always there waiting for us to, I think, accept it and step into it. Those sort of things were going through my mind when you were speaking. And I'm so beautiful for you to pick up your own book and look at it afresh, anew, and see what it's speaking to you and how those inspirations are taking you to the next next place of experience.
Yes, they indeed are even taking me to that next level of the book I'm writing right now. Like the book, it was like, oh, here's the jump off point and where we're at.
I guess the question I have for you then, as we as human beings find our way to love beyond our own self, as you were describing and really prescribing as well, how will that transform us? How will that transform the world that we live in? I mentioned, yes, we're co-creators, but it's just that's just a couple of words, maybe easy to say, but really functionally, how will it, if we move into that, as you were saying, the consciousness of love, how will that change us, change the person we know and live with, our neighborhood, our world at large? Do you have a sense of that with your musings and your work?
I really love this question for so many reasons. So I'm gonna begin with how it came in, and then let's expand and play with this together. I'm gonna begin how it came in, define co-creation, and then let's play with this idea. Because as it came in, I heard that this love is the immune response. And in the book, when I talk about healing a fracture or a wound, the very first stage of healing is that immune response that we don't often think about. Blood rushes to the site of what's broken or wounded, right? And all this oxygen comes in and it heats up and it swells. And literally it's getting the essential components of healing immediately to what's in need. And I think about the immune response of us for the planet at this time. And we need to rush in with that amount of love. And, you know, disease, illness, same kind of thing with this immune response, right? And you are the expert on this. So I'm going to ask you about the science of this love after we dig into this. But quite literally, I saw this, the power of the collective immune response in its co-creative capacities, which I'm going to define in a second, as literally this next level of our evolution and this leap. And I think it's essential to really, we're coming through the heart, like we're opening the heart, we're coming through with these new capacities. So before I go to there, the opposite of that, and I catch myself, but I hear this all the time, is how many are fearing, as in the opposite of love, or even hating what's happening and the thoughts, and therefore the emotion and the constriction in our body and in our hearts as we're looking around at the fear, at the violence, at the horrible things that we're seeing in the media continually. And it's literally creating the opposite effect as the love response, as the relaxation response that Herbert Benson writes about, you know, that we've learned about with the stress response versus that. It's like we're moving into this chronic constriction instead of this chronic or eternal expansion of love and consciousness. So it's good medicine. It's good medicine for us and our bodies. How many of us are warring with our own bodies on the inside? So this co-creative capacity, I'm going to share the definition of co-create or co-creation from one of my mentors, Barbara Marks Hubbard, and then my beautiful beloved friends, Catherine Roski and Carolyn Anderson, who wrote the book, The Co-Creator's Handbook. Because they both, Barbara and The Co-Creator's Handbook, defines co-creation as aligning with this higher source. So here we are, aligning with that divine source, that divine intelligence, the designing intelligence of the universe, this unconditional love that we're talking about. We align with that, with ourselves. And then we do that in community with others who are doing the same. And that's where co-creation comes from. So it's not only a co-evolutionary partner with this divine source, but with this community of love and care together, as you and I create this show together. We are both aligned with this divine source, aligned with love, and then we trust that this voice that's higher than the two of us comes through inevitably, and we co-create the show. That's the kind of healing response we need on the planet. We need to see ourselves as co-evolutionary partners and co-evolutionary healers of this planet, of our species, and of our own individual beingness as multidimensional right now, that we really come into that. I could say more, but I see you sitting on the edge of your seat, so I'm going to pause for a second.
Again, as before, there's so many places to take this. And I was thinking in part of where are we heading when we do that? And I was thinking of Chris Bosch's work, whom we've been interviewing, as you know, and his work on the future human.
Yeah.
Because as you were describing that, I was thinking to myself, so that's co-creation as you're describing it. And I think we each have a sense in our own personal experience when we enter into a kind of co-creative process with someone else. We feel that energy and the change, and whether it's an expression of creativity amongst other things. So I was wondering then how, when we enter co-creation with somebody or a group of people, how does that affect the environment beyond us, beyond us immediately, that is? Do you have a sense of that? Because I think in those cases, we're entering into a creatorship, if I could put it that way, that we don't fully understand, but we have that willingness. And what I mean by not fully understand is, what are we then cultivating of whom this future human's going to be? Because one of the things I must say I so appreciate about Chris's work is that he's describing a future human that honestly none of us at the present time can really imagine or understand. It's almost like some steps of faith we're having to follow, all these impulses that we're speaking forward and coming into compassion and love as being, let's say, a primary ingredient to get us there, a willingness to that. But then also knowing within that, gosh, we just don't know yet. But we know we need it.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to respond with some of these innate capacities that are turning on, and how does that affect beyond the individual when you talk about co-creating in community and literally that compassion, that care, in that I like to say that the unified field of consciousness that's in coherence is the miracle zone. It's the miracle zone. It's where the good stuff happens. And so, number one, this practice of coherence, science is showing us, HeartMath, thank you, HeartMath. They're doing amazing research in this field of coherence in the heart. And literally, we know that coherence, heart coherence, affects the field around us and expands as more and more of us are in that. We also know that there's a global coherence that is happening as more and more of us around the planet come into that coherent state together, that love state, that heart space of really practicing coherence. And they can measure, you know, they measure that. They measure that in a lot of different ways, but they're measuring the field and they're measuring the happenings as things unfold on the planet, as we're in these global meditations together, or things that aren't happening, right? So I think that the practice of coherence, and I'm just coming into that stillness as I say it, as I say coherence, I want to just come into this calm, still place of my coherence, that silence. I could feel the nothingness, which is another clue for us, right? I'm going to go there. I'll go there next. But this coherence, when we come into a state together, the quality is more important than the quantity of the number of people. This is what the science is showing us now. It's like the quality of our coherence, the quality of us tuning into our heart and those feelings are more important than the number of people doing it. So we have a real effect. So I don't know about you. Maybe perhaps you can tell us some of the research you've come across it with healing and coherence and love. But for me, it's also this place of a miracle zone where I'm noticing with my own clients and with myself how immediate things are manifesting, how immediately we're getting guidance, very clear guidance, new capacities of taking in, like being the knowledge, not needing to take in information, but sourcing within and having it be, you know, so immediately accurate. So there's a lot of different ways that I think that that comes in, and there's a lot of ways we could practice and we can look at other metaphors, but let's pause. And I'm just curious if what from the scientific place and your book, Science Being and Becoming, you've worked with so many scientists through the University of California, San Diego in this capacity with psychoneuroimmunology and cardiology, and you're watching all the alternative integrative modalities that have come forth. What's the role of the heart in our healing, Paul?
A couple of things. I'm so pleased that a moment ago you began to describe some of the changes you personally have been experiencing. You started by mentioning the nothingness.
Yeah.
And then you went on beyond that. And that to me is a beautiful feature to emphasize, because when we move into these co-creative spaces out of compassion, perhaps we see somebody that elicits compassion in us and that has a beneficial effect out there in the environment. Of course, one of the primary effects we get to experience is that on our own self. How are we transformed through the process of co-creation? Then specifically, let's say activating love, or I can speak a little bit about gratitude, but probably historically, so any of the known virtues that have been appreciated for millennia, when those are practiced and cultivated, we as the practitioner of those things are also changed.
Mm.
I can mention a little bit about gratitude and the science of that, because I did work in that area for some time. And I worked with hundreds of patients at UC San Diego, mainly cardiology patients, but others. And some of our work was just to have them begin to cultivate gratitude, a gratitude practice, that is. And we did that at UC San Diego by teaching them just how to do journaling on gratitude. And we gave them some specific instructions how to do it, but not, we weren't overbearing, because we wanted it to just manifest naturally in them. And the science that we found when people did practice gratitude is it had an immediate effect on their body health, as well as, if I may call it, their psychosocial and their spiritual health too. On the body side, we drew blood samples, which we often do in our research, before they engaged in these gratitude practices, and then a couple of months later. And the people who had did this work had really significant, and in fact, very surprisingly significant reductions in a whole panel of biomarkers that we measured. And these are standard biomarkers that many cardiologists would measure, as well as anyone interested in general inflammation as well. And these dropped very significantly in ways you just do not see clinically typically. And we also measured things like depression and anxiety and sleep capabilities. And then we looked at gratitude really as a component of the broader concept of spirituality itself. And engaging in gratitude as, well, we can call it a virtue, perhaps. Also, just transformed their overall sense of spirituality. And as an immediate effect, too, that I found very important, it really does help the person relinquish some oversense with their own, let's say, I guess I could say the ego or their sense of identity in the world. And it helped to expand that sense of identity, more a sense of connectedness, which as I say that, this to me gets back to your co-creative comments and foundation that we're speaking about in part today. It helped them step out of themselves and into something greater than themselves. And for me, this is a transformation in consciousness, sense of self. They weren't going into the no-thingness necessarily, but they were expanding who they experienced themselves to be. So for me, that's a very powerful example of co-creation. And they know that they knew they were in a study with others who were doing the same thing. And they were co-creating and co-cultivating gratitude. And it was, there's a beautiful to see.
That's a great example. And gratitude is one of those feeling responses that opens the heart center. You know, it's like the compassion, the joy, the love that's moving that energy from the heart center. I love that. Do you practice gratitude? Do you have a gratitude practice?
I do. Yeah. And I don't do the journaling so much anymore. It's more, you know, when in gratitude research, and if you read through it, there's this idea that basically you practice things specifically for a while until you develop an attitude of gratitude, which means it's become more of a trait rather, it becomes more of a trait rather than a state. And in psychology, we differentiate states and traits, and states are the things that come and go. And a trait is something that a person's cultivated. So it's really there all the time. Mm-hmm. And I would say for the most part, that's more where I reside. And gratitude ultimately isn't so much, I don't want to be conflating it with the like being thankful, which is also important, of course, being thankful of things. But gratitude really is, and again, if I can refer back to what you spoke of earlier, these foundational experiences of love, gratitude is, I think it's being in a state of being that is being in love or loving with everything that's in and around a person's life. I did a deep meditation on this once, and my experience of gratitude, what we call gratitude as an energy, let's put it that way, as a vibration, is when we ourselves are participating in the Creator's love of creation.
Mm.
If you think about the Creator, then love being all there is, so to speak, and the love that the Creator has for creation itself, that she has brought forth. When we experience gratitude and tap into that vibration, we are residing in that energy of love of creation, of love of being, we could say. If I can encourage our listeners to sit down and do a deep dive on what is gratitude as a vibration beyond your thoughts and concepts of what you think it is and how we've been, say, habituated to what it is. Where will you go if you do that kind of meditative work? What will you find? Maybe something completely different. But I'm sharing what I came across.
Thank you. I think that the state and trait piece is a really important idea for us as we're looking at these new evolutionary capacities that are coming in, because we're moving out of the transient states and we're really looking to substantiate this expanded consciousness, this unitive consciousness and beyond, this cosmic consciousness, right, into the being. It's like flooding our systems with love and light but not having it be a state that we go to in meditation, or a state that we have in a fleeting moment of oneness on a mountaintop, but we really receive as this new trait, having this flooding of love and light being the essential nature of who we be. You know, it's like, it's not like, oh, we flood ourselves with love and light when we need healing. It's like, oh, we receive and be that. And that is shifting so many things, you know, right before our eyes.
Yeah, I love that. So many of these processes we engage in, well, that's the reason we do it, isn't it? For more of an ultimate transformation, to create ourselves anew again and again and again.
Again and again and again, create ourselves anew. Let's go there. I love that. Create ourselves anew. This evolutionary process, there are a lot of people on the planet who are already in this state. And I believe, and I know, I'm going to say from my knowing, I don't know about you, but I have a knowing that all of humanity is evolving with these energies, with these frequencies on the planet, whether we're aware of it or not, whether we're seeing it or not in others. That's part of the love, everything right now with that creator's love, that compassion love to heal, is that even those who we see as the other, or as evil or dark or bad, really are waking to this new level of consciousness. And it's happening. So the making ourselves anew, I think that's another part, another coping mechanism, or another pathway for us to really pay attention to, is that this isn't about preserving the way we were, or going back to an ultimate state of health or wholeness. It really is an evolutionary leap forward of something brand new. So we talked about the chrysalis. And I think it's really important to understand the story of the butterfly, that literally is this caterpillar goes in, makes it, eats everything, right, in its environment. It's like totally overeats and overextends and consumes. And then as they're creating this chrysalis, the process is not, what do I need to do for the adjacent possible? How do I shift a little bit? How do I change a little bit? What's going to be different? It's really letting go of who that caterpillar was and come into this complete dissolution process of letting go of everything. And that's the experience that so many of the people I work with are having, my clients are having, of this continual dissolution process of it starts with time, space. It starts with the world, the material world that we have, and it's a different kind of process. But in that, there is this continual rebirth, and it's a renewal. It's a re something. Some people say don't say re because it seems like it's going backwards. But how do you say we're born again? We're born again. We're born again. It sounds kind of funny, but literally this caterpillar is made brand new. Mm-hmm. Something brand new emerges from this process. And the thing that I think many are confused about on the planet right now is that seeing this as a one-time process of awakening and then boom, we're done. And this literally is like, we're building the bridge to the new world, and then there's another bridge, and then there's another bridge, and then there's an, you know, it's like we have this awakening, and then there's another layer. There's a Chris Beige talks about this in the book and in the episodes that we've done with him. Is this process isn't a one and done. It's a continual expansion, a continual evolution into a greater and greater capacity So, yeah.
That's a pathway of endless surrender. And with that said, I have a question, because you're describing some of your clients and friends are going through this now in their lives. And how are people managing it? Or can I even ask the people who are more successful at managing it, meaning, yes, they're willing to go into the state of surrender to the unknown, cross the next bridge. And of course, implied in that is the surrender of the old self. I mean, so many religious, philosophical, meditative traditions emphasize that again and again. If you want to succeed, you must surrender. The death, rebirth, resurrection motif in so many systems. So how are people doing with it? And those who are successful, how do they get into that state where they're willing? Okay, I'm going to let go. I don't know where I'm heading next. I don't know who I'm going to be next. That takes faith. That's a lot of faith.
Yeah. And grace. Yeah, and grace and gentleness and compassion. Like that's the thing I love about like being in the company of those who are in the process, is this need for that unconditional expansive love that you're talking about, right? It's like build the field and we all emerge together somewhere in there. So, you know, those who manage the best, who are managing well, I'll just share a couple observations of what I'm noticing. One observation is the ability to, it's like a full integration of timelessness and space-time continuum. And yet the integration, at first it seems like, I'm thinking of one person in particular. I'm going to talk about him first. And his experience began with a need to just unplug from the three-dimensional world, unplug from time space, like to literally go into the no thingness and create safe space for him to be outside of time space. So it was like an intentional, I can't be a part of the world around me because I'm too tender. I'm too vulnerable. I'm too not substantiated, not, you know, it was like, I'm a baby trying to walk and I'm falling down a lot. So with him, he created intentional space and did that in a lot of different ways. It seems like what you've got to go to a monastery or find a cave on a mountain at times, but literally he had really some creative, fun ways that he created it in his workplace. He created new language. And by the way, he is a spiritual leader, a by profession leads a spiritual community. So for him, as this was happening, he would use language that bridged both worlds. And it was a challenge at first. Like he couldn't go back into the old world. And yet he began to really using beautiful language. A lot of it is like a lot of this evolutionary language, right? He talks about co-creation and heart coherence. And like he could literally encourage his community to be in this space and then go into his own space away from that. And he found himself, which was an interesting journey, not preaching about the world in its state, but preaching about the beauty, the love, the kingdom mentality. You know, like he had to consciously not observe current events and go there with his congregation. He had to literally stay in that other space. And that's where I'm saying the integration. Now he's moving into a flow where that kind of thinking being doesn't pull him or tug at him or yank him out of the trait instead of the state. Like, because he's substantiating that new way of being. He's also surrendered to, like, I just have to speak this truth. And if it's not resonating with some, it's not resonating with some. And he's moved into a whole faith, a belongingness of the higher realms, a belongingness of a multidimensional way of being. Like, he's seeing himself fully in it so that the truth that comes through him is the only thing that matters. And so he's not afraid. Like, it was like he graduated and let go of faith. I mean, let go of fear and moved completely into a state of faith so that it doesn't pull him around like a storm, like, you know, a boat on a rocky ocean right now. He doesn't have that. His rudder is so deep in the truth, the true nature of reality. He's just like, he just sails smoothly through this. So yeah, I'll pause and let you jump in here because I didn't expect to go there, but there's probably a lot of other things that could say too, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, that's such an appealing to me description of how a human being can live their life. So he's centered in a way that I'm assuming he wasn't so much before, because you said he had to retire from the world in a way because it was just too hard on him. He was too sensitive, so therefore he was being more buffeted around by the, you know, the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then he rebuilt himself somehow, as you're describing.
Yeah. Yeah. When he could see that the systems and structures that have supported him and sustained him are breaking down, at first it was he saw a need to revive them, like to save them. Like, this is my sustenance. This is my career. This is my life. This is... And when he shifted, like you asked, how do you do that? When he shifted into going into the true nature of reality in this unitive space, and even let go of his fears of the metaphysical, because he could channel, he could be intuitive, he just has more innate capacities that are turning on. When he saw that, I always like to say this, quit doing CPR on a dinosaur. Like, he didn't see his role as saving his workplace or saving the institution. He saw his role as speaking his truth and walking this path. And then it's really, it's beautiful. The transformation of love versus fear over those kinds of, like, security issues. Like, those are the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy of need, right? It's like,
yeah, yeah.
The future, your safety, your security. And he transcended that.
And it sounds as if, yes, he transcended it. And it's also changing his environment around him. I think that's a beautiful take-home lesson from this description, this beautiful example that you're providing us. And yeah. I must ask, how is it affecting his students or parishioners? I don't know this person, but you're hinting is in some. How is it affecting them? Because you've described for us, I think, so clearly, a person who is willing to do more and more of the surrender process, regardless of what would be the outcome. He didn't know. But things have turned on in him, you're describing, have been activated. Mm-hmm. Tell me how, if you know, how it might be changing, how it is influencing people around him for their own ability.
I'm really glad you asked, because that very issue is why he sought the spiritual guidance from me in the first place. Because of a conflict with higher ups and kind of chaos with those that he served. Mm-hmm. So, like, he was in between that and having these experiences and not knowing what to do with it. So, much like Chris Beige has described and wrote about in, I can't remember the classroom book. Remember when he talked about going into these states and stages, and then he's noticed how he's had an impact on the consciousness in the classroom. And so, sorry, Chris, I can't remember the name of your other book, but this person, my client, began noticing this field that was always there. Like when he came into this new way of being, it created this field of consciousness. And those that he was serving, wow, how do I describe it? I can describe what was happening with an example of what happened to one of his colleagues. Like literally, he was in a kind of a contentious, that's not the right word, but there was a colleague that he had a difficult time relating to and getting along with, and was a part of peers and higher ups that were really depending on him to lead. And what he noticed was when he began to shift into his heart space and hold this field, like, okay, I'm going to go into my workplace and build a unitive field and hold the love and then speak from that place, like using this new language, like he began bridging the language from the old to the new. And when he began doing that, everyone around him began growing. He said it was like moving a pot of a dead house plant that wasn't working. And then he moved it over to this field and everyone began to flourish from that space. So he saw it as this, you know, you take a house plant and you put it over by the sun, or you give it a little north sun instead of west sun that's not too hot or whatever. He said it felt like this field, he has lots of examples, but literally this one person that he had difficulty getting along with, he stayed in his truth. He emanated this big love, and then he watched as everything rearranged. He didn't have to use words. He didn't have to go into conflict. Everything rearranged itself into a higher order. So it was like, again, that miracle zone, right? Like build the field, build this field, be in that truth, be who you are, and trust that the universe, the designing intelligence, has a plan and things get rearranged and reordered accordingly. Isn't that cool? That was a cool example.
It's the best, I think. And it's such a comprehensive example on all the dimensions because, yes, you described how he's changed, but now you're describing how his change has led to others changing. And I have a question on that, but I want to comment first that he's really kind of a pioneer there, because all of us, as you know, we're all socialized in our societies, whatever society we've been raised in, we're socialized to think the same, generally act the same. This phenomenon, and it's not easy to step out of that, because generally, when a person steps out of it, everyone notices them in a way. They're now different, and that can have adverse effects, which in some ways you were describing he was getting. Mm-hmm. But I must ask, so he was experiencing how others were beginning to change, and I'd love to hear, how then did that change environment that he began to cultivate, but the others began to contribute to the field because they were willing to, you know, be in the sun, so to speak, as you said. How then did that change the field and his own unfolding and experience of self and, you know, change self and so forth?
Yeah, I love this example. I'm glad you asked this, because the rest of the story was, and I got to think back over time of him, and he uses the creative arts as a big part of his tool, his therapy. But I can't remember how long it was from developing that new capacity to really hold this field and be in it. It seems like it was just months, but it might have been closer to 18 months. And, you know, the house plants flourishing, the house plants are flourishing and they're propagating and they're growing. And quite literally, he was offered a brand new position that he didn't even imagine. He never imagined this new vocational expression of who he was coming in. Like he wasn't looking. He wasn't miserable and wanting to make a job change or, you know, anything like that. But in the long run, the field got richer. It was more nourishing. I'm thinking about us cultivating, you know, from this field as the field gets more, what would be the word for that nourishing, that nurturing, that the fertilizer that's making the houseplant grow again. It's like something shifted the longer that he stabilized that in his life. Other interesting side effects of this new are the relationships in his family and with friends, like literally some long time, really painful relationships have healed and others have dropped away naturally. But one family member, they are celebrating a really beautiful reunion type relationship that feels good, feels comfortable, and is something he never imagined ever. Yeah.
That's such a beautiful example that you've given us about the potential here. When one human being is willing to step into this journey of surrender and transformation and surrender and transformation, yes, that person's life, we know, presumably by definition, that their life will be different. But you share with us so beautifully how this has led to the change in people's lives around him in ways he could not foresee. That's the magic of it. I couldn't help but wonder, while you were speaking this as an example, what will happen when millions of us are doing that journey and all these interactive effects that we can't predict, but perhaps this gets to what Chris speaks about with the future human. Future human, the potential when all of us are utilizing these innate gifts we have as co-creators, literally, what will be created from these fields? Honestly, I have no idea.
Yeah, I didn't expect to share these stories with you today, or his story in particular. I didn't expect to do that, but I'm really glad you asked, because as you were speaking, it really does give us a glimpse into the capacity of this evolutionary journey. From, you know, as I was talking about the world and loving the world versus our own evolutionary capacities, and really being, it's almost like there are so many, I don't know about you, Paul, but I have so many friends and colleagues who are on this evolutionary journey, right? Like consciously on the journey, doing the spiritual work, talking about what's happening with them. And it's almost as if when we can have these examples of those who really kind of substantiate the consciousness of love, like this new way of being on the planet, when we really fully can embody unitive consciousness, then these results are what I opened with. It's like coming out of our own evolutionary journey to be that co-evolutionary partner with the divine source itself, like not worrying about Do I need to go on a retreat? Do I need to go into isolation by myself? Do I need to, you know, it's like we're so focused on the evolution or the awakening or the experiences or trying to bring this state of being into some new level of functioning for ourselves, that if we could focus on the world and let our heart break open and be all of it moving forward and really love the planet, I think we're all going to transition very quickly. I don't know about you, but it just feels like shifting to the whole of us will move all of us in a higher, I don't know, I'm at a loss for words, because that state is a place that doesn't, it's hard to describe what that is, you know, that stage or trait versus a state. So yeah.
Isn't it true that what you just described, that's what Chris was saying in his book and his interviews with us, that ultimately what will get humanity from where we are to where we need to be, really fulfilling our birthright in many ways, is a deep love and compassion for the suffering of others. And that somehow we're not there yet fully, but when we get to that level as a group, then it'll begin to really turn on so much of the substance of change and transformation.
Mm.
To get us to the new world, so to speak, the new human, the future human.
The new human.
Is that correct? That's as I'm recalling.
You know what? He does speak about that a lot in the later chapters. He also literally brings us into this space of some of his experiences where he was witnessing that. And it was, yeah, he does talk about that. And I think that in our, one of the shows, we did talk about the idea of how it's not easy, like these going through these next evolutionary stages, I'm going to say stages instead of steps, that looking at the pain and suffering, looking at war, violence, looking at what's happening isn't easy, but it's supported. It's like we're supported in our ability to turn our eyes upon it. We're supported in our ability to open our hearts to it. We're fully supported in our capacity to speak to this love in the face of the fear and the atrocities. So I think that, yeah, it's a beautiful invitation for us. And as it came in for me the last couple of weeks when I was reading my book and I saw the immune system, like, of course, this is the immune system for all of those atrocities. And as our body comes in to heal, it's not fighting those things. It's loving all the good white cells into doing their job better and sending extra blood and oxygen to those areas that need that flow of love and light right now. So I love the idea that this is an immune response and we can move into it without fear. Like, let's move toward it and open our hearts, open our minds, open our eyes, open our voice, and really love more in that space.
Oh, can I say amen to that?
Oh, you can. Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Paul. You know what? This is so not where I thought we were going, but I love that we did. And I just want to close. Maybe you can just speak a little to this too. I just want us to close with the idea that, you know, we started Main Street Mystics so we could normalize the non-ordinary, so we can demystify the mystical, so that we can all begin to talk about these new ways of being, but also our experiences that a lot of times we haven't talked about. And it feels like that's an important part of the prescription right now, too, for this immune response, Paul, is for us to share our stories. It gives us courage to love more. It gives us courage to be who we are. It gives us courage to turn toward the collective and not retreat and constrict into ourselves and our own pain. I'm curious if you have anything you want to just share or highlight about why you think it's important for us to share these stories and demystify the mystical here.
Yeah, for the reasons you said, and I'd also add the word inspiration. For me, it's always inspiring to hear stories of inspiration, of change, of potential. We mentioned the monomyth a bit ago. That to me is a big example, a universal example, when we hear stories of people's journeys and growths. Because at the end of those journeys and whatever growth they came into, they always circle back to serve the community, like your friend in this example you gave us. He went out, he went on this journey, change, transformation, death, resurrection. He came back with gifts of this field he's residing in, of perceiving in a different way. And then his community inevitably began to change, because that's how it works. So for me, I'll add inspiration to that. And I'm very pleased where our conversation is led, because I, for one, am very much wanting to find examples and to be able to speak about things that we as individual people need in the here and in the now. Because there's a lot going on. And we need to know that we can engage our own will and our thoughts and our feeling and begin to direct where things are going on, and to create that transformative capacity. We need to continue to enliven so many of these God-given gifts that we have to create around us. And you just gave us a fine example, I'd say.
Thank you. You know what just moved through me as you were speaking was the idea that our mind wants to know what's going to happen. Like our mind wants to go evolution, oh, light body, oh, awakening, oh, we're, you know, and it's going to look like this. And I think this conversation to me today just reminds me to encourage everyone to let go of the mind's need to understand and move into the knowing, that still point, the play in that, like when you said right here, right now, it's like the present moment contains all of this, even our evolution. It's not out there in the future somewhere. It's right here, right now. So come back into that still point, that place, be still and know place. And that's where the wisdom, that's where the knowledge, that's where the guidance, that's where the experience, the felt experience of this unity and this evolutionary capacity is turning on and tuning in. It's all right here, right now. It's not out there. So we can't live from the outside in anymore. We have to live from the still point in and go out, the inside out now. Like navigate from the inside out, even when it's uncomfortable and your mind wants to know. Start inside, go to the heart space, check in, and let's do this differently. So, yeah.
Thank you for that. I'll give you an amen to that one too.
All righty. Any last thoughts from you, Paul? And then I'm going to wrap this up with something special.
We're good. Give us something special.
Okay. So as I was prepping today, I had to turn that song on. It's Louis Armstrong's What a Wonderful World. But I was reminded of that coming on, and I listened to it today and sent it to people. And it's so beautiful. So I want to leave you listeners with the lyrics of Louis Armstrong's song that I opened with, What a Wonderful World. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands saying, how do you do? they're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I'm Julie Kroll. You've been listening to the Dr. Julie Show, All Things Connected. This is the Main Street Mystic Series with co-host Paul J. Mills. Remember, together, we are creating connections for the good of the whole. Until next time, we're sending you a world of love. Bye for now. If you enjoyed the show, go to your favorite podcast platform. Remember to subscribe, rate, and leave us a review. Also, please consider supporting the Dr. Julie Show at patreon.com/allthingsconnected. When we each give a little, we all get a little more. You can stay in touch with me at juliekrollemail.com. Thanks for listening.